If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers, airing weeknights at 12:35, 11:35 Central on NBC, right after The Tonight Show.
The Trump administration was rocked by scandal on Monday when National Security Advisor Michael Flynn resigned after revelations that he may have secretly discussed U.S. sanctions with the Russian ambassador and then lied about it. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. We're just over 3 weeks into the Trump administration, and we've already got our first major resignation, which means that, in a way, Flynn did accomplish something historic. According to the Washington Post, he set a record with his resignation as the White House National Security Advisor. No one in the 64-year history of the role had a shorter tenure than his. The average tenure is about 2.6 years. Flynn was on the job just 24 days. 24 days. I used disposable razors longer than that. He didn't even last as long as a David Blaine stunt. At the rate resignations are happening, Trump is going to open his first State of the Union address by saying this.
And now I will step down.
In all seriousness, now that Michael Flynn's historic tenure is over, I think it's only appropriate that we take a few minutes to look back on his many highlights as America's national security advisor.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Now, to be fair to Flynn, he may have broken the law and then lied about it, but it's not like he ever accused any other public official of breaking the law and called for them to be thrown in jail. Oh, what, he did? Fairly recently? And it's really ironic to watch now? Stop talking so you can just show it?
I have called on Hillary Clinton to drop out of the race. We do not need a reckless president who believes she is above the law. If I did a tenth of what she did, I would be in jail today. Lock her up. That's right. Yes, that's right. Lock her up.
I guess that's why Flynn's resignation letter was just the phrase, lock me up, written Shining style on a typewriter. Now, Flynn and the Trump administration insisted for weeks that Flynn did not discuss U.S. sanctions with the Russian ambassador when they spoke in December. But the story changed last week when the Washington Post reported that Flynn did, in fact, discuss sanctions despite the administration's repeated denials. So after these revelations, did the White House still have confidence in Flynn? First up to answer that question, White House policy advisor Stephen Miller.
Does the president still have confidence in his national security advisor?
That's a question that I think you should ask the president, and I look forward to having more discussions about this in the future.
So the White House did not give you anything to say other
they
than
did not
that
give me,
on,
they did not
General
give me
Flynn.
Anything to say.
You cannot say whether or not the president still has confidence in his national security advisor.
It's not for me to tell you what's in the president's mind. That's a question for the president. Well, it's a question for our chief of staff. Asked and answered, Chuck.
Let me...
Stephen Miller looks like the guy who shows up with a flashlight when teens are getting drunk in a graveyard.
You kids shouldn't be here.
So Miller didn't provide much clarity, which is why on Monday afternoon, MSNBC turned to another White House official, Kellyanne Conway.
General Flynn does enjoy the full confidence of the president.
Okay. Well, I guess that's it then. Kellyanne Conway says Flynn enjoys the full confidence of the president. And if there's anyone in the White House you can trust, it's Kellyanne Conway.
National Security Advisor Michael Flynn has resigned.
Just a reminder that if Kellyanne Conway is ever on TV saying there isn't a tornado coming, get in the basement! And then there's the president himself. And the question of what the president knew and when he knew it. The Justice Department apparently warned the White House weeks ago that Flynn had talked to the Russians about sanctions and then lied about it. And today, White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer said the White House has been reviewing the situation for weeks. And yet, just a few days ago, when asked about the Flynn situation, Trump said this.
What do you make of reports that General Flynn had conversations with the Russians about sanctions before you were sworn in?
I don't know about it. I haven't seen it. What report is that?
The Washington Post is reporting that he talked to the ambassador to Russia before you were inaugurated about sanctions being tried to...
I haven't seen that. I'll look at that.
Trump sounds like a guy who's being told there's a nude scene in a movie he's definitely already watched.
Oh, is there? Huh. Well, maybe I'll check that out. For the first time, it'll be the first time.
Well, today the president finally commented via Twitter, and apparently the problem for him is not that Flynn lied, but that we found out about it. Trump tweeted, quote, "The real story here is why there are so many illegal leaks coming out of Washington. Will these leaks be happening as I deal on North Korea, etc.?" All right, first of all, you're the one who conducted highly sensitive North Korea discussions in the dining room of your private club in Florida. As the New York Times reported, Trump and his top aides coordinated their response to North Korea's missile test on Saturday night in full view of diners at Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida. The scene was so public, people were posting Instagram photos of it. Also, look at that face. He looks like he's posing for a funny office poster. You don't have to be crazy to work here, but it helps. I just hope that's the same face he makes when he's called in to testify in front of Congress. Now, this morning, Republican leaders were suspiciously quiet about the crisis within the president's national security apparatus. Why weren't they saying anything? GOP Congressman Chris Collins offered this explanation on CNN this morning.
When you have a man of Flynn's stature resign and in his own letter saying that he misled, maybe even lied to other members of the White House, why is everybody so quiet?
Well, it's Valentine's Day, and I guess they're having breakfast with their wives.
Breakfast with your wife is not a Valentine's Day gift. Most of those wives probably said, "You want to have breakfast? What did you do?" When Republicans did start commenting, many shrugged it off as not a big deal, like Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton, who said the Flynn resignation was just an example of the Trump administration, quote, "finding their sea legs." Finding their sea legs, which is helpful because this presidency so far is the perfect storm. This has been A Closer Look.
Hi, this is Fred Armisen, the music director of the HG Band. Did you know that Late Night with Seth Meyers has a podcast now? That's what this is. And it's released every Wednesday and Friday. Tell your friends who love Late Night that they should subscribe at iTunes.com/LateNightSeth. You'll find it. What I just said, you'll be able to find it. I believe in you.
Our first guest tonight hosts HBO's Emmy and Peabody Award-winning show Last Week Tonight, which just returned for its fourth season. Please welcome back to the show our friend, John Oliver. How are you?
Fine. Good. Thank you. Happy Valentine's Day Eve.
Thank you. Yeah, happy Valentine's Day. Are you well sorted out? I know you have a wife. We both have wives. Are you ready to go?
I guess my answer to that might suggest I might not have a wife tomorrow. No, I'm not well sorted out. I've got a card. That's enough, right?
Yeah.
I'll take that as a no.
I will say this. My wife said to me once, all a wife really wants is a thoughtful card.
Right.
And then the next holiday, I got her a thoughtful card, and she very patronizingly said, "Oh, look who listened." Like, that she had said other more expensive things that had gone in and out.
Yeah.
But card, I said, done.
It's funny, because my wife literally said exactly the same thing, and I've also remembered that very deeply, which is why I'm justifying what I'm going to do tomorrow as being enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
If you want to set the bar low, so be it.
Thoughtful card. Thoughtful card. That's tangible affection in written form.
Yeah.
What gift can compete with that? I would argue none.
Yeah. That's pretty much the text of my card. I know what you're thinking. I could have bought you something, but I have 10 points.
And it's not a great sign that it is a long precursor to this card saying I love you, which is this is what you wanted. I've given you what you wanted. You brought this on yourself. Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Say if this is bad next year.
I can't decide to end mine with I love you or happy now.
Why not both?
Yeah, that's true.
Why not both?
Last time we saw each other at a very interesting time. We saw each other the night after the election.
We did.
We were performing for a charity event called NRDC, a great environmental rights group.
Yes.
And let's both be honest, we agreed to do stand-up at this event. We did not think that it would be that kind of night.
No, when I agreed to go out anywhere.
Yeah.
Months in advance of that, I wasn't thinking, bear in mind, this will be the first day of the Trump presidency.
Right.
Or the president-elect-cy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, it was a weird evening. Comedy was not really required.
No.
That night.
And yet there were five of us.
Five comedians basically all saying some version of the same thing, and no one with the balls to just go on and say, let's talk about those sneakers with the wheels in the heel.
Yeah. It was like, usually when you have five comedians, you know, there's that sense of, hey, what are you going to do? Because I don't want to do something similar. It was no one was backstage saying, hey, I'm going to say how up is this? But anybody else doing that?
And I was also very concerned that, you know, it's a great environmental group. But there was part of me wanting to say, tigers may need to just move down the pecking order for 4 years because humans are endangered again. Yeah,
right.
So,
There was a reason, there was a reason evolution gave tigers.
That's right, listen. That's right. They can fight their way back from this. We need help. Where are the tigers marching around a zoo for tigers? That's what I'm saying. Tigers. Where were you?
Yeah.
Where were you in Michigan?
Wisconsin. Not a single tiger.
No tigers.
Knocking on doors for Hillary in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Your last show, so you were back last night. Your last show before that was you blew up a giant 2016 sign.
I did, yeah.
I believe the theme of that show was basically 2016.
That was the theme of the show, and I would argue the 12 months that led up to that show was this year, it hard, and we don't know it yet, but tigers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've come to that conclusion. And we found someone else to blame. But this was a practical explosion.
Yeah, so it was.
This was not green screen.
No. It was a massive explosion. We did it in Red Bull's arena. And I went there the previous day, election day, and there was a lot of stunt people there. And they said, listen, there's going to be a blast radius and you're inside it. So you're going to feel the blast move through your rib cage and it'll move your heart a bit. And so I'm a natural coward.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not giving you information you didn't assume. I'm a cowardly human being. So I thought, this is going to be terrifying. I hope I don't flinch. Then Trump got elected and I went there, stood there and felt nothing at all. It was amazing, the kind of bravery. Yeah, it's like, on the Venn diagram, it's where bravery and nihilism completely collide. You just think, if this is the end, I'm fine with that, and in fact, I welcome it. Yeah.
You, I often will see you when your show is on break.
Yeah.
And for anyone who thinks that you're taking it easy, I can attest to the fact that you guys work pretty much all the way through.
Pretty much, yeah.
And because of the kind of show you do, that means you cannot disengage from the news.
That's right.
You have to remain fully engaged.
That's right, like a heroin addict not being able to disengage from heroin.
Yeah.
And that is often how it's felt. Endorphin rushes and then this isn't good for me though, is it?
And so, no vacation.
Not really, no.
When you come back on after 2 months, people should not think that you have been kicking back.
No. I'm not sure I've ever kicked back in my life. I don't think I have the personality to kick back. I don't think anyone has ever seen me relax anyone and go, look at that dude kicking back right now.
Man, I wish I had as few worries as John Oliver.
That's right. Kicking back big time.
Pina colada sipping John Oliver.
That's right. He looks like Jimmy Buffett over there. I tell you who I would argue at the moment should kick back a little less, and this might be controversial. I'm a little sick of seeing photos of President Obama on vacation with Richard Branson. It's just tone it down with the kite surfing pictures.
Yeah.
I'm glad he's having a nice time. America is on fire.
Yeah.
So I know that people accused him of being out of touch with the American people during his presidency. I'm not sure he's ever been more out of touch than he is right now, as he's kind of pushing him on a surfboard. I
don't mind that he's doing it. I just can't believe he hasn't said, "Hey, don't take pictures."
Yeah, don't take pictures. I'm not sure this will play well. Me going, "Wee!" Wee! Isn't this fun? We're losing public schools. Wee! You're fiddling while Rome burns. Wee! Billionaires are fun people to be around.
That's true. He's really. Bernie Sanders must hate it. Oh, it's like, look at him hanging out with billionaires kite surfing.
I guess that would really test the courage of Bernie Sanders' convictions if he could go to Richard Branson's island and not go, "Wee!"
Just stay inside, put on like a giant mosquito net.
This is wrong. This is wrong. But it's fun, though, isn't it, Bernie?
Have you come to terms with the fact that
the answer's no. Whatever. I haven't.
But Donald Trump is now the most powerful man in the world, you could argue.
Yes. Yeah.
And yet this is sort of a natural progression for him.
Sure, because he's always pretended to be that way.
Yeah.
He's always acted like the most powerful man in the world. That's how he carries himself through his, I'm sure, childhood as well. He kind of dons the disposition of the most powerful man in the world. Now he actually has the power to go along with that. It's like the secret was real and it worked for one person. And unfortunately, it was him.
So Oprah, because she promoted the secret. That's right. Been out there.
That's right. What I'm saying is, Trump is Oprah's fault.
Yeah. If she
just said, "I read this book, but you know what? It seems like bull." Seems like there's problems are a lot more systemic than this book really implies. And he's going, "No, I can do it. I can will this into life."
You have a 14-month-old son,
yep.
I think, around then.
Yep.
And is it nice to have someone around who has no sense of this at all?
Yeah, I'm jealous.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm jealous of mine, too.
I truly would like to myself every day with impunity and also not understand the news.
Yeah. But I don't... yourself not out of fear must be the greatest
it's
relief
the dream.
Right now. Yeah.
It's the absolute dream. Just to listen to your body and say, "Let's do it now."
Yeah.
Who's that on the news? He looks silly. Actually, he's less silly than he used to be. I don't know if you found as well. They're at a good time, our kids, right?
Because
you didn't need to... We didn't need to explain anything to them.
Yeah.
I do not envy parents who had to rationalize the irrational for their children. It's good having kind of high-maintenance houseplants.
Yeah, there you go.
Right now, yeah.
Yet another thing children bring to your life. I want to get back to politics, but I want to ask about this because you obviously have been very successful in your career. Emmy Award-winning, Peabody Award. It's not bad. But your father, when you were young, your father wanted you to be a soccer player for Liverpool.
Of course, yeah.
And... is it true that he still wants this for you?
Yeah, of course. Even though I'm now older than the entire Liverpool team, what's even truer is I still want it for myself as well. This is not what I wanted. This is a distant plan B. I didn't want to be here.
Yeah. And you know what must really hammer it home? No one on Liverpool wants your job either. No one on that team.
That is so true.
Yeah. Not one guy sees you and is like, "Oh, what I wouldn't give."
I really want to be a British nerd on American TV with a small audience. Yeah, exactly.
Must be great camaraderie. No, not really. It's pretty isolating.
Yeah, did you not want to be? You must want to be.
I did. But
What did you want to do? That?
Baseball, yeah, I wanted to do that.
You wanted to do that?
I wanted to do that.
That's a good one. That's better for you than that.
Yeah.
When you can't.
I was instantly bad at that.
Yeah.
And then it took a little longer to be bad at that. Yeah. But were you any good?
I thought I was... You know what? I read this book when I was a kid about one professional player who had been really bad until he was 15 and then suddenly got good over a summer. And boy, that summer of 15 really let me down.
Yeah. But Because here's the thing. My father, your dad wanted it for you. My dad knew at a very young age.
Oh, right, he
was pushing me towards comedy.
He wanted it so badly. There was one time at the Edinburgh Festival, there was this game we played at a local Scottish team, a bunch of comedians. And so it's a Scottish team not taking it very seriously because we are a bunch of idiots. And it was us living our dreams. So my dad was there and I scored. And I took off my shirt and ran into the crowd to give it to him. And I handed it to him and he had tears in his eyes. It was a weird moment of, I think this is as close to your dream as I can give you. And I know it's a long way away, but this is all we're getting. Let's savour this moment together. Yeah.
I once ran for a fly ball near, like, so I was running towards the bleachers that my dad was in. And I remember him screaming so much louder than all the parents saying, get there, get there. And then just really in and out of the glove, and then just everybody else quiet, and then a son of a bitch.
That is like a movie.
Yeah, it was. I feel like in my sporting life acted out every bad scene of a sports movie. I tried out for my high school baseball team, got 10 pitches, only made contact with one, fouled it into the parking lot, where it went off my dad's car that I'd driven there.
Oh, that's, but there should be Kate Bush behind that. Yeah. Don't give up. Give me one more pitch. No, he's bad. Son of a bitch. Yeah.
But it's good. Has your life now provided access to Liverpool for your dad? Have you, like, brought him to games and stuff?
Yeah. I don't live in that country anymore.
Yeah.
I've moved.
You never visit?
Not really.
Okay.
I work all the time.
Oh, that's right. You don't take vacations.
Yeah. So no, I've not taken him to see Liverpool. But yeah. I worry that even if I did, it would just be too visceral an experience of, yeah, this is what I wanted my son to do. And now I'm here, I feel it even keener than before. Yeah.
I want to go back to Trump for a second, because one of the things is I feel like there's everything you could be afraid of in a Trump presidency. A lot of those things have already happened.
Sure.
Like attacking judges and things like that.
Yeah.
Having phone calls with foreign leaders that go awry. Mm-hmm. Is there something you're waiting for, like a box that will make you panic if it gets ticked?
You mean what? Like a final thing that he could do that would make me think it's over?
Yeah, what are they?
probably like a 50-foot-high portrait of himself in D.C. somewhere.
Gotcha.
That's usually the canary in the coal mine for authoritarian regimes. The moment someone goes, and that's a big picture of me, is where everyone goes, oh. That's right. Well, somewhere in the back of their heads going, Tigers, man. they were nowhere.
Nowhere. We waited for those Tigers.
Where were you, Tigers?
I remember, I'll never forget that night watching CNN and they were getting the returns from Tigers and it was so much less. So many fewer Tigers showing up.
Yeah, that's right. There was exactly the same amount of Tiger involvement as voter fraud, it turns out.
I know you have no time off. So thank you so much for making the time
to
come here.
It's
always great to see you.
I love it.
John Oliver, everybody. Last Week Tonight is Sundays Night. We'll be right back with more Late Night.
Hey, everybody. My name is Henry. I am a segment producer here at Late Night. John Oliver just finished his interview with Seth. I'm backstage with him now, and I'm going to ask him a couple more questions. So with President Trump, I feel like a lot of people assume that comedy is super easy right now, and your show would kind of write itself. That is not
yes.
the case.
That would be... It would be great if that were the case. And I know a lot of people have said that to me in the streets. It's a well-meaning, not entirely accurate wish for you, right? Which people will say, you're kind of set for the next 4 years. It writes itself. And it really doesn't. It's much harder. It's much less fun in a way. Because like, normally with comedy, you start with something serious and then you make it funny. And with this, especially like over the whole election, it was a question of taking something that's already completely devoid of protein and trying to inject meaning into it, which is a weird way for comedy to operate. And it's probably not the way it should, that you have something now where Trump will say something which is objectively laughable
and then you have to find a way to convince people it's actually worth listening to, that it's important. It's more important than it sounds.
Right.
It's more important than nonsense.
Right. And you were saying you struggled with this a bit at The Daily Show, too. When you had George Bush, you had to find... You couldn't just play tape of him.
Yeah, because... Right, exactly. So that was one of the many things, pivotal things I learned from Jon Stewart, was that, you know, you could get laughs off the back of a clip in the W. Bush years, because he would say something and you'd already have a laugh. But that's not a joke, right? There's literally an absence of a joke there. Yeah, that's an unearned laugh. So you then have to write a joke, and often the joke can't necessarily be about the clip directly, because that's already been proven to be funny. So it's about finding a broader framework for to hold those, like, bits of low-hanging fruit.
Right, right. Let me just ask you also, you tape your show Sunday nights. What does your week look like? What's your production week?
Well, we kind of don't even work in necessarily a week cycle. I mean, our week is we work Wednesday to Sunday, and the days get longer and longer and longer and longer. But with those main stories that we do, which can be like 18, 20, 30 minutes, even longer, those... we're often working on for weeks ahead, not just in the week, because the danger is if you get something wrong, well, you don't want to get something wrong anyway, right? Because otherwise it undercuts everything that you've just spent a lot of work saying. But also sometimes we're looking at things that are so toxic and legally explosive that we'd be finished. So like we did a lot, it was longer than 30 minutes, a one story on multi-level marketing, which Herbalife was a big part of. If you get anything wrong there, we're probably done. Right? Yeah. That's probably the last show we ever do. Yeah. So, we just can't be wrong.
Right.
We don't want to be wrong, but we also can't be.
Right. Yeah. Well, you guys are doing such great work, such an awesome show.
Thanks.
Thanks so much, John.
Thank you.
Come back
soon,
please.
Thank you very much.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot. And someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.